Welcome to Book Hype, Hypeable's podcast all about books. I'm Jen, and I'm here today with Mikhail and Karen. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Hi.
And this week we're going to talk about some kind of cool stuff that's really just coming into play in the publishing industry, and it's something that's being talked about quite a bit because it's kind of making a stir. So we're going to talk about new adult literature, new adult genre, I guess. I'm not really sure if we call it a genre or a category. It's one of those things that's debatable. And we're also going to talk about this big wave of self-publishing versus traditional publishing and self-published authors being picked up by traditional houses. But first, we're going to talk about what we're reading this week, because it's always a great way to start, and I'm always curious to know what everyone else is reading. So Karen, do you want to start with what you're reading this week?
Sure, but it's going to be a little bit of a disappointment because I'm a bad book hype host, and I'm still reading Beautiful Creatures even after all this time, so just trying to get through that book right now.
Okay, and Mikhail, what are you reading this week?
I just finished reading Scarlet by Marissa Meyer, which I think I mentioned on the last book hype, and it's the second book in the Lunar Chronicles trilogy, and it turned out to be really good. And I really liked it.
I finished just a little bit ago, Revenge of the Girl with a Great Personality. It's Elizabeth Uhlberg's new book. Mm. And it's just really fun and cute and really, like, girl powery in a sense. And it kind of pokes a little fun at pageants and things like that. So I just enjoyed it. Elizabeth has a great sense of humor, and it was a really fun book. And I'm also reading, an Arc of Icons by Margaret Stoll, who is a co-author of Beautiful Creatures. So I'm in the middle of that too. And it's a really cool, different kind of story. Kind of creepy a little bit. Different kind of creatures in the story. So I kind of enjoying that quite a bit at the moment as well. Okay, so our next segment, and we're going to call this Book Bites, we decided. Mikhail came up with the name and it's kind of fun. It's a little section where we'll discuss something fun to do with books or bookish type items. So, Mikhail, I heard you have a lovely topic for us. What do you have?
So, I was talking to a friend online today about the new posters for Catching Fire that came out, and I started discussing Catching Fire and Mockingjay with her, and both of us had were a little disappointed, or in my case, very disappointed in those books, and we were talking about them, and we ended up disagreeing on certain things. But I started to get really upset, and not at my friend or anything, just, like, reading those books was, like, very intense for me, and very kind of, I was very upset by the end of Mockingjay and a lot of the decisions, Suzanne Collins made in, Catching Fire, and it just was funny to me, like, how I was still getting angry about things, about books that I have decided that I don't really like, you know, like three, four years after they were published. And I just wanted to, I guess, talk about the idea of, like, books continuing to affect you, like, way after their expiration date, so to speak. So do you guys have any experiences like that at all?
I have. There is a book that I was desperately looking forward to because it was the third book in the series, again, kind of like Mockingjay was. And I read it, and it was such a letdown compared to the first two books, because things happened within the book that were kind of, it felt like the easy way out for the main character. Like, there was a love triangle and conveniently one of them dies. And I was just like, really? I just felt let down. So I get how you feel about that. Like, I understand it. And I think that's the power of books in a lot of ways, even though the book has been out for 3 years and it's, you've read it, you've experienced it, you've been through it. There's something about books that are really, really powerful that kind of stick with you. And people, especially now that most things come in a series or a trilogy, people become really connected to the characters, with the book, with what's going to happen to these people that you've kind of grown into knowing. And so it's hard when it doesn't turn out the way you want it to turn out, or it turns out so far different from what you think with books. So I understand that feeling. And like I said, the one that I had read was kind of, I really liked the first two books, and the third book, I just was really disappointed because it felt like a cop-out. Everything was wrapped up in a nice little bow, and isn't that convenient? And we just bumped off this character and there was no really solid reason for it. It was just, that's what happened. So I'm there with you. I've experienced that before.
What about you, Karen?
Yeah, I'm totally right there with you too. And I'm going to kind of pull out a pretty obvious answer to this, but, and this isn't so much as being disappointed, but I mean, I still cry every time I read the seventh Harry Potter book. I mean, I've read this dozens of times, you know, and I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to come. And yet, you know, some of those scenes, like when Fred dies and all that, like you can't help it. It still just sticks with you after all that time, because you're right. You get so invested in these characters, especially with a series that has seven books that, you know, a lot of us grew up with this. You know, we waited for every book to come out each time. We have a lot of time and years invested in it, and you can't help but be so connected and then either be really upset when something sad happens or really disappointed when the book just sort of, you know, maybe the sequel or the third book doesn't really hold up to the rest of the series.
Yeah, and, you know, I was also thinking, like, it kind of made me reevaluate how I thought of, like, a successful book, you know, because I'm not a fan of Catching Fire and Mockingjay, even though I really do like The Hunger Games, but if I'm getting still so, you know, hot and bothered about it, you know, 3 years later, then what does that kind of say about the power of, you know, because, like, obviously books do have that power, but we all have books that, like, we gave up halfway through, or, you know, or just, like, somebody asked you if you've read it and you have no idea. Yeah, I think it's interesting to think about, like, if that kind of book is successful, even if it's not successful in, I guess, this was a great book and changed my worldview and, you know, made me love characters. If it can be successful in a way that, like, just by virtue of its continued emotional effect on you.
Exactly. And I actually compare that a lot to The Casual Vacancy, where I don't think a lot of people enjoyed that book. And I didn't particularly love it either. But by the time I got to it, I feel like it served its purpose, even if I didn't necessarily care what that purpose was. You know what I mean? So even though the book might have not been my favorite book ever, I think sometimes even when we're disappointed or, you know, it makes us upset, at least it's causing emotions in us. At least it's not like, oh, this, you know, book meant absolutely nothing to me.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think when we hit a book where we're just like, oh my God, if I read another page, I'm going to fall asleep because it's that boring or interesting, or characters just feel so false. I think that's a much easier book to discard and put aside than a book where you want things to happen because you are so invested and they just don't happen the way you want them to, and that's why you don't like it. It's more a matter of taste than a matter of quality. And I think those are signs of good books. Because you could hate a book, but you could hate it because it doesn't have what you want it to have. And that's different from hating a book because it's poorly written. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's how we can gauge what we establish as a good book as readers. You know, it should have something that I'm interested in, but there are books that I really don't like, but that doesn't mean they're bad books. It means that they don't match what my taste in books is at the time, or what I like to read at the time. As I've said, like I said last time, I'm not the biggest fan of a dystopian novel. Does that mean I can't read The Hunger Games and Divergent and all of those things and appreciate them for what they are? I can absolutely read them and appreciate them. They're well-written. They're quality stories. It doesn't mean I'm in love with them and want to read them five times over, but I appreciate them. So I think that's where the difference is.
Yeah. For me, it's not a book, but The Dark Knight. I watched that movie and I couldn't deal with it. I just couldn't stand it. It was too everything. And my brother is a massive Nolan fan, and he's like, you know, I've discussed it with him, and he's like, how do you not like that movie? And I'm like, I don't think it's a bad movie. I just don't like it. But I will sure as hell remember Harvey Dent's half-face for, you know, a really long time. Yeah, so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. And
yeah, I think that was a really interesting topic. And of course, as listeners, if you guys want to leave comments about maybe something that, how you feel about what makes a good book or what doesn't make a good book, or a book that you felt like you were waiting for and then you were sorely disappointed in it, feel free to leave that in the comments, because I'm really curious what other people feel about books and like where their disappointments lie and stuff like that. I always find it interesting what people love and what people are like, oh yeah, it could have been better. So definitely leave something in the comments. Okay, so now we're going to jump right in to our big discussion. And we're going to start with new adult, because new adult is the thing out there. It is the buzzword of the new year, shall we say. And it's been around for a little while, but it hasn't been talked about as much as it's been talked about in maybe the last 3 to 4 months. It seems to be everywhere. There are new adult books making the New York Times bestselling list. They are just kind of in the New York Times, you know, being discussed on the list, in the Washington, in the Wall Street Journal, excuse me. They're in that as well. So they're just kind of everywhere. And Karen, you have some knowledge as to young adult. So I'm going to let you, a new adult, excuse me, you know, that too. So I'm going to let you kind of tell us what it is, what it's all about, and we can go from there.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So basically new adult is pretty easy to understand. It's like the next step up from young adult. At least this is what I've grown to understand it by. But usually the characters are about 20-somethings, whereas young adult, they're usually 16 or, you know, they're young teenagers. This is more like it deals with first times, like first time going off to college, maybe, you know, first time having sex, depending on what the story is about, those sort of things. And it's just a little, it's not quite adult and it's not quite young adult. And there's a very large scale when it comes to young adult. You have things that are more toward the middle grade and you have things that are more toward adult. So when I think of new adult, I think of, you know, it's close to adult, but it's not quite there yet.
Okay. See, from what I get from new adult, it's kind of, I like your description of it's meant to be about kind of like first things, like going off to college and sexual experiences and what have you. There's also this element of like it's 18 up usually, or early, like early 20s is typically the zone, the age that they're going for, the range. And it's usually the ones that I have read have all been kind of these grittier stories. I don't know if you guys have come across the same thing, but that's kind of one of the things that I've noticed is that it's much edgier than what one would expect in like a traditional young adult novel. They're usually, and I've read someplace that there are like fantasy and paranormal new adult titles. I have yet to come across any. The ones that are sent to me or that I've been given to read and stuff have not been paranormal. They've all been kind of realistic fiction, and it's all been very edgy and very, you know, yeah, edgy is the best way I can describe it, I guess. So that's what my experience has been. And now, do you guys think it's a genre or is it a category? Because that's the other thing that I always find interesting, because where do you put it? Like as a librarian, where would I put it in a library? As a bookseller, where do I put it?
See, that's the problem, because there is no section in Barnes & Noble for new adult yet. I mean, there is for young adult, but for new adult, there's not a whole lot of representation. And this is something that amongst my friends and other writers, like we've run into a lot. It's still a very brand new category. I'd call it a category rather than a genre. And you know, you can't just go into Barnes and Noble and find the new adult section.
Yeah, that's something that I'm not knowing terribly much about it myself. I'm curious as to whether it's, this is going to sound awful, but if it's more of a marketing distinction than I guess a meaningful one between you know, like I guess proper adult books. I guess what keeps coming back to me is Chick Lit, which is apparently dead. I kind of wonder how new adult, I guess, differs from that other than the name and its sellability to maybe a wider range of people. And I don't mean to put it down because I haven't read any of any new adult. So I am just talking from, you know, the perceptions I have.
I don't think it fits into the category of, you know, the traditional idea of Chick Lit. It's definitely different from that. It's not like I said, it's got an edgier vibe to it. It's tackling topics that aren't traditionally looked at in literature. So I think a lot of it's just kind of out there, and it's, I mean, they're extremely well written and well thought out, and they have, you know, a lot of depth to them, which isn't what I think traditional chick lit would be considered, if I'm remembering, like, do you know what I mean? So there's definitely more to it. So I think the idea of giving a category to new adult is that, like in television, you have a target marketing range, right? So you have the 18 to 49 or whatever it is. That's your target market. So right now in literature and in books and in book sales, one of your biggest markets is young adult. It sells to everybody. it has a huge span, you know, of age range that it sells to, mostly female, but a huge age range. So then you have, you know, like 50 Shades of Grey comes out and you're selling erotica like crazy. So here you have young adult and here you have erotica on the other end, and they're both selling extremely well. So how do you bridge a gap in the middle? And so I think the idea behind new adult is to have something that carries the storytelling of young adult, and then you add a little bit more sex to it that may not be allowed to be published in a typical young adult book. It doesn't really fit the age range. So you bump it up to this new age range, you're covering a different demo, and the stories are a little bit different and about different things. So that's kind of, and like I said, the ones that I've read are fantastic. They're not something I would typically read, because again, they're all realistic fiction. They're all kind of heavy in topic, some of them, and but again, all really, really well done. So I think that the authors that are writing new adult right now are writing really good quality stories. And when you have a good quality story, it kind of just sells to whoever likes to read a good quality story. It just, you know, again, it's a preference of what you like to read. Yeah, so that's kind of how I see it and how it kind of fits in into the world. So I don't know. Karen, do you have some thoughts on that?
Well, I'm coming at this more from a writer's point of view than a reader's, I guess, because a lot of the friends that I know, they're either indie or self-published writers, which is going to come into play later in the episode, which is cool. The thing that I've seen them run into a lot more is that publishers actually, and this is definitely changing, but in the beginning, publishers didn't actually want to touch new adult at all. And I don't know if you've noticed this at all on your end, Jen, but a lot of the times, you know, they'd send something off to a publisher or an editor, and they'd get it sent back. Oh, well, this is a really nice story, but we want you to change the ages. You know, instead of being 22, we want them to be 16, and you're going to have to rewrite some of your story. Because the thing is, people aren't looking for new adult. I mean, some are, and maybe they don't know that it's called new adult, but a lot of people want young adult. That's what sells. So I think it's becoming more of a thing, and, you know, the more people hear about it, the more interested they're going to be in. And if you think about it, a lot of people our age grew up with, you know, Harry Potter and all these books that really got people back into reading, got younger kids. And now that we're a little bit older, we're all looking for something different. So I'm really hoping that new adult becomes more popular and that category gets more recognition, because it definitely deserves it. I know that I really like new adult because for me, you know, I'm 24. It's more relatable. It's less stale. There's more things that you can get away with in it. It's less filled with all the teen angst, and, you know, it's more dark and raw and real. And those are things that I'm really starting to appreciate rather than just the young adult stuff that's all, you know, happy endings and things like that.
Have you read The Hunger Games?
Yes. I mean, obviously not all of them have. But, you know, there are quite a few that I feel like they just, you kind of know where they're going to end up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally hear that. And I think that that's something that as almost exclusively a YA reader, I definitely have issues with. Something I'm interested in, though, because being, again, also pretty much exclusively a fantasy and sci-fi reader, I wonder where, I guess, what's going to appeal to me in this genre, because what I like about fantasy is the dark places it can go and, you know, the questions it raises, and I probably would be really interested in a new adult fantasy novel, but I don't know that would offer itself as a new adult fantasy novel, as opposed to just either a, you know, something like The Daughter of Smoke and Bone, which is, I guess, maybe just a very advanced and brilliant, and you should read it, young adult novel, as opposed to just a, you know, it just goes in the fantasy section. So where the actual genres kind of play around the new adult level, and if there's even room for them outside of just the realistic fiction or the books that want to talk about sex and drug use and, you know, maybe slightly hyper-realistic fiction.
This is why I think that new adult is more of a category than a genre, because it's not limited by you know, it can do anything that young adult can do. It's just set for a slightly older audience that's more mature and more open to, you know, like sex and drugs and reading about those sort of things and not being bothered by it. So if you like fantasy books, there's going to be, if there aren't already, I'm sure there are, I just don't know a whole lot of them off the top of my head, but there will be fantasy books and sci-fi books in the new adult category. It's just, you know, we need more writers to start writing them and then more people to realize that they're out there for the category to grow.
I think my big question is, what's the difference between new adult and just being an adult? Like, why the category of new adult? How do you differentiate between the two?
Yes.
I think that's my biggest thing with this. I don't really have a huge issue with it. I get what it's trying to be. But at the same time, adult is adult. How do you, just because you're newly an adult doesn't change your right, you know what I mean, your reading. So that's what I think I find interesting about it is, and this is why publishing houses weren't picking it up to begin with, because what does a publishing house do with it? Where do they put it? How do they market it? And that was the biggest issue, I think, was that nobody knew what to do with it. You have these great stories, you know, they're fantastic, but they're not quite young adult, and you know, wouldn't an average adult read them? There's that big question mark. So that's why I guess that's the confusing part for me is how do we market and how do we differentiate this category from the category of adult?
Well, something I wonder is I think that it strikes me, like I know a lot of adults who read young adult, right? And I feel like because there is kind of an expected age difference that when you pick up a young adult book, it's probably going to be about a teenager, as opposed to someone who is just a few years younger than you and kind of starry-eyed by the whole adult thing. And, you know, I wonder if it's a little bit restrictive like that, in that, you know, people who would be willing to read YA, even though it's younger than they are, that, you know, would be turned off by new adult. I don't know. Karen,
okay,
answer.
So, yeah. Well, I actually have a resource for everybody who's interested in this. And the website is called naalley.blogspot.com. And I know one of the girls, Juliana, who's one of the people that runs this website. And this is a website literally dedicated to new adult fiction. And they've got a huge list of new adult books on here, and they blog usually about every day, and they're an excellent resource for this sort of thing. So right now I'm on their about page, and they have this, what exactly is new adult fiction? So I'm just going to read this super quick, and maybe that will answer some questions. But it says, we view new adult fiction as a category of literature, meaning it gives readers content expectations, but it does not dictate genre-based criteria. Typically, a novel is considered NA if it encompasses the transition between adolescence, a life stage often depicted in young adult fiction, and true adulthood. Protagonists typically fall between the ages of 18 and 26, though exceptions may apply. NA characters are often portrayed experiencing college, living away from home for the first time, military deployment, apprenticeships, a first study job, a first serious relationship, etc. And then they say that other terms for NA include upper young adult, crossover fiction, or mature young adult.
Okay, well that was very helpful. Thank you. So I guess this is one of those situations where time will tell where new adult's going to go and where mainstream publishing will take it as opposed to self-publishing will take it. Because I think right now a lot of new adult is self-published still. Yes?
Oh, yes. Yes, okay. Definitely.
Like, I know of a couple that have sold really, really well and were picked up by publishing houses, but they were self-published first. And it wasn't until they sold strong that they were then picked up. So yeah, so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see kind of over the next year where new adult goes, if it becomes a more publishing house oriented kind of thing, or if it's still a self-publishing kind of thing. So we'll see. So Karen, do you have some titles that you can suggest? Is there anything out there right now that you think is fantastic in the new adult world?
Sure. Well, I mean, definitely I'll repeat the website again. It's naally.blogspot.com. Definitely go there. They have a catalog of NA reads, and it's gigantic. So if you guys are interested in reading anything, just check that out. They've got it all alphabetized and links to everything. So that's a really great resource. One of the ones that I wanted to mention is called Forest of the Forsaken by Joanne Brothwell. And this is sort of self-promotion, so I'm sorry about that. But I actually edited this book, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. She does pitch it as a sort of new adult type thing, and it is supernatural, paranormal. I'm not sure. I mean, it's fantasy. It's basically a story about Hansel and Gretel, but it's a spin on that, and it's very different. It's very real and very dark. It is almost borderline erotica, but I mean, and that's usually not my thing, but it doesn't take away from the story and it doesn't overpower the story either. But just so you guys know what you're getting into if you decide to pick up this book, but it's really well written. And I think it's one of the better self-published, because she is self-published, one of the better self-published books I've ever read.
See, that's one of the first times I've heard of a new adult title that is a fantasy book as well. Like, literally, I'll never forget, I think it was in the Washington Post that I read, there was an article about new adult fiction, and they were talking about it, and their line for what new adult was, this is how they explained it, it was Harry Potter meets 50 Shades of Grey. And I'm like, oh, really? Are you kidding me? I'm like, that is not new adult at all, and that's such an unfortunate way to describe it. Like,
I would not pick up a book that was labeled like that.
It was the idea of, you have the popularity and, you know, the generational effect of Harry Potter with, you know, the erotica of 50 Shades of Grey. And I'm like, no, just no, that's not okay. So it's interesting that you actually have a a book suggestion that is fantasy and erotica all in one. So yeah. I thought that's kind of funny, actually, because it's the first time I've come across it.
With this category, like, I know I was sort of hesitant at first too, and I actually don't tend to pick up a lot of new adult books because they tend to be romances, and that's just really not my thing, you know? I mean, they're fiction, obviously, but it's not, like, I'm like you, Mikhail. I just read fantasy and science fiction, and that's pretty much it. I don't like the mushy stories and stuff like that. So I don't usually read those, but this was one of them that had those elements of the supernatural and yet had the romance and all that too into one. So I found the book really interesting. So I hope that, you know, if you guys haven't picked up new adult yet, maybe start with this one, or maybe one that's slightly less intense and, you know, see if you like it and maybe go from there.
Yeah, see, and the only ones that I've read have been more like realistic fiction. They have elements of romance, but they're not strictly about romance. Most of them are about just life in general and what it's like to be a 20-something on your own. Or one of them was 10 Tiny Breaths by K.A. Tucker. And for that particular one, it's about this girl who, her and her sister live with her aunt and uncle, and she realizes how bad the uncle is for her sister. So she kind of like takes her sister and runs away in the middle of the night to take care of her sister because she doesn't want them near that family anymore. So they have to go and start over. So this is really about a 20-something who is now a primary caregiver for her sister and responsible, and they've run away from the only family that they've known, kind of thing. So that sense of real world experience, which is kind of different than what I usually read, but again, really very good. Another one I've read is Easy by Tamara Weber. Also very, very good. And the latest one I read was If You Stay by Courtney Cole. And this is going to be a series, and it's called the Beautifully Broken series. And this is the one that was really heavy on like the drugs and the sex. So if you do read that one, just be aware that like the opening, even the opening of the book prepares you for what's to come, because the opening of the book is a very graphic description of some things happening. But again, you get this sense of this is what it's like for an almost addict, and this is what their world looks like, and this is how they live. So it's very different than most of the things I tend to read, because I tend to read paranormal books or fantasy books of some sort as well, So it's a different kind of read, but it's still a really, really good read. And If You Stay and 10 Tiny Breaths were both self-published. 10 Tiny Breaths actually got picked up by a publishing house, and If You Stay has been on the New York Times bestselling list since it came out a couple of weeks ago, which is a kind of a big feat for a self-published book. I mean, I think that's a fantastic thing when a self-published book can do that. So there's that. And Mikhail, you haven't read any, right?
Not that I know of. You know, I don't tend to, I tend to get my books in Barnes & Noble, so I don't really get Cumming or, you know, anything outside of kind of my immediate vision. So, I mean, I didn't really realize that this genre was quite as big as it was. I mean, I'd heard of Losing It by Cora McCormick?
Yes, that's another one that did really well.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, it I think what maybe interests me most is, like you were talking about, Karen, from a writer's perspective, like, how would you play with yourself? I mean, how
what?
Would you? I'm sorry. No, I mean,
that's not.
Oh my god.
Anyway,
I mean, how would you take a character of your own age, because it's. And put them in a situation, you know, that like a fantasy situation or a sci-fi situation or dystopian or et cetera. Because, it's interesting to think about because, I mean, I feel like we're maybe trained to think of these characters as that people want to write as having to be younger than they are. And it's interesting to think of them as equal to, you know, their own age. I'm intrigued. I'm still maybe cautious, but I'm intrigued.
Very good. So let's talk about something that very much kind of connects and relates to the new adult topic, which is self-publishing kind of versus traditional publishing and how that all works out. Because self-publishing is, again, something that's fairly new and fairly new in its success, I should say. I guess people have been self-publishing for quite a while, but the success of self-publishing has only risen with the rise of kind of like the e-reader and things like that. It's easier now, I think, to self-publish something and have people actually be able to find it and access it and read it when you have places like Amazon and, you know, Barnes & Noble with its Nook and things like that. You have the capability and ease of finding things, I think. So self-publishing has kind of made this name for itself in a sense. So what do you guys think about self-publishing in general, and what do you consider self-publishing?
Basically anything that's not done through an agent or a publishing house. Literally somebody could go and upload a book to Amazon and bam, all of a sudden you're an author.
So that scares me.
Yes, it should.
I know, you know, when I interned at an agency, and maybe that affected the way I perceive self-published books, but I don't know. I mean, it's interesting about the industry in general, and that, you know, do you need gatekeepers for quality? You know, if you do, why is there so much crap out there? You know, so I don't think that self-publishing is maybe necessarily a bad thing, but I do think that the volume of it makes it very hard to, you know, for maybe a reader like myself who wouldn't necessarily be inclined to troll through Amazon's, you know, self-published list to trust maybe that what I was going to pick up would be good. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like a forest of scary creatures, you know. It's like you might find a unicorn, but you also might find a tree, a dead
yeah,
tree.
Trees so scary.
Wizard of Oz, okay? Original young adult.
That's true.
Okay. Okay. So, now that we're through Mikhail's scary forest.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I find it completely amusing. But here's the thing with self-publishing, especially now. There have been million-dollar deals from publishing houses for people who are self-published. True. I mean, seven figures, easy, for at least, I think at least two different self-published authors. One YA, one erotica, which, you know, is what it is. But, I mean, clearly there is some value to it, to a publishing house. And I can think of at least three different New York Times bestsellers that were once self-published that were picked up by a publishing house and then packaged and published. So I don't know. Like, I get the idea behind traditional publishing and why it is what it is and what they do. But right now I feel like traditional publishing is taking a really hard look at self-pubbed authors. And if they have the numbers, they're being picked up by traditional publishing houses.
Oh, yeah. If you think about it, I mean, you've got a built-in audience right there. You know, there's already people who have read them and liked them and follow them closely. And if they took the jump for a self-pubbed author, then they're going to stick with them more than likely, I would think. So the authors have already proven themselves, and self-publishing is hard. I mean, it really is easy in a way because all you have to do is upload it. But, you know, if you're very serious about self-publishing, you have to treat it like a business and you have to do everything yourself, your marketing, you know, all of your deals. If you want to put it out for free, there's a lot of work that goes into it. You have, you know, to set your own deadlines. So I think traditional publishing houses look at that and say, okay, this person is serious because they're already doing this by themselves. And then they already have a built-in audience. They've already proven themselves that they can write something that people like. So I think that's why a lot of publishing houses tend to pick them up.
Maybe it's sort of just a different kind of gatekeeper. I mean, none of the books that I know of that I've read have started off as self-published. But I could be wrong about that. But, you know, I guess if you're using, like you say, the numbers as a barometer of quality, and obviously, you know, presumably publishers are looking into the quality as well, then maybe that's, you know, it's a little bit more of an equalizing system, which I hadn't thought about it in that way before. But I mean, it's true in terms of it being easy. I feel like there is a very strong dichotomy, because when you say self-publishing, my initial reaction is, oh my gosh, that's so easy. Even though I know intellectually that so much effort goes into it and so much, you know, personal sweat, blood and tears go into it.
See, for me, I think is for self-publishing, if you don't have someone edit your work like thoroughly and it's not well edited, you can tell. Like, I think that's the biggest difference between a self-published and a traditionally published book, is that if you write it and you go over it yourself and you do all this stuff and then you just put it up on Amazon. I've come across a couple that have been really, they've been so hard to read because there were so many eras that I couldn't like get through it. Where there's others that I've read that have been fantastic and, you know, but they've been well edited. So I think that that's one of the big differences, is that as long as a self-published author, you are putting in the effort to have it edited and to do what you need to do to make it a finished quality product, then the work speaks for itself. There have been some really great self-published work out there, because I mean, getting traditionally published can be really challenging. Like, I know of one author who is normally traditionally published, but her book that she wanted to tell, the story that she wanted to tell that she wrote and then she put all this time and effort in and loved it, there were other people that had already picked up, like some of the houses that already picked up a book similar to this, so no one would pick up her book. Even though she's a fantastic author and she does great stuff, no one would pick it up because it's something that had already been picked up and they didn't want to have duplicates. So you kind of run into that as well. I think in some cases, like there's a saturation point at some time for all things. Like, we had our saturation point with vampires. In fact, I think we may have been oversaturated a little bit, you know, and then we kind of hit this dystopian, you know, phase right now where everything is dystopian. And if you're not happening in a dystopian world, then you're just not happening. And so I think at some point in time, we hit a saturation point with certain types of stories. So if you are writing a story just because it's a story you need to tell and it hits a market that isn't really available right now, sometimes you don't have a lot of options. So self-publishing is a great option. So I don't think there's, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but I do think you have to make sure you do put the effort in and you do, you know, do the editing and the things that are really required as if you were at our traditional house, so that this way you are putting out the best quality product that you can.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think people will find a lot more that authors are beginning to be hybrid authors. You know, some of their books are self-published, some of them are traditionally published. Somebody off the top of my head that I'm thinking of right now is Chuck Wendig, and he's a really funny guy, really great writer, really great blogger too, and he does both, and he's very successful with both. And I think people self-publish a lot of times because they have more control. You can get a lot more money out of it. You know, you don't have to worry about, oh, well, the editor accept my title or my cover? Do I have to change all these things? There's no contracts. You can pretty much do whatever you want to do, which, yes, that can be bad. There is a lot of crap out there on Amazon right now with self-published authors who think that writing a book is easy. You just slap some words on the page and bam, you're an author. But there's also a lot of really good self-published authors out there, too. So I think there is a huge stigma with self-publishing, but fortunately, that's sort of changing. You know, I think people are starting to realize that just because somebody's self-published doesn't mean that they're a horrible writer. Sometimes that's just the better road for them to take.
No, I definitely agree. And like I said, sometimes the door isn't open for you, so you have to open a different door. Or you have to open a window, as the saying goes, and do what you have to do to make yourself successful. And I think that's how a lot of people have found success. And like I said, a lot of authors have been picked up and have been incredibly successful. Like Colleen Hawk, who wrote the Tiger's Curse series, she was self-published. Then she was picked up by Sterling. She became a New York Times bestselling author, and The Tiger's Curse was optioned and is being penned by Julie Plec. So,
oh wow, I did not know that.
Extremely successful. I mean, that's, how can you go wrong with that? You can't. So, and she started off as a self-publish, you know, and she didn't even take off in the States at first. She took off in places like Indonesia and stuff like that, which is really weird when you hear her tell her story. Like, it's really cool how her story kind of comes full circle. But at the same time, like I said, she's been incredibly successful, and she started off as a self-help. So,
yeah, like, Chelsea Fine also, right? She,
I believe so. I don't know that one off the top of my head. But Amanda Hawking is another one. That's how you say her last name, right? Like, she wrote that whole, the Trill series, and it did incredibly well. And then I think she landed, like, a 7-figure deal for, like, the Trill series and her next series, which is the Water Song series, I think. So again, really successful, as she had like over 1 million downloads on Amazon or something like that.
Oh, is she is that the Trill book?
Yes. Yep.
Ah, okay. I read an article about her in the New York Times. Yeah.
So she had amazing, ridiculous sales on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, traditional publishing came calling and she went with it. Because, I mean, I think that there's something to be said for having other people have your back. It makes it a little less stressful, I think, for you in a sense, too. But so there are lots of success stories. And then, of course, and this is going to segue into the next topic when we talk about self-publishing, we have 50 Shades of Grey. And as we all know, 50 Shades of Grey was a fan fiction that became a self-published novel that became a novel. Kind of. That was picked up by a traditional. I have a lot of ill feelings towards 50 Shades of Grey. I'm just going to throw it out there now.
I was going to say, do we have to talk about it?
Unfortunately, for what it is, we do.
Yeah.
I will defend 50 Shades of Grey in one respect, which is something I'd never thought of until I saw somebody write a brief thing about it. Which is its effect on the potential legality of fan fiction in general, because I'm a big supporter of fan fiction, not when people try to make money off of it, but the fact that Stephanie Meyer did not pursue legal action against Ms. James, I think, supposedly is a good precedent for people who, you know, post on fanfiction.net, an archive of our own, and, you know, have, you know, even thousands of readers, but, you know, are still kind of in the legal gray area of their writing with someone else's characters. So I will say that if that pans out, then thank you, E.L. James.
I really like what Stephanie said about that, actually, where she was just like, obviously she had a story to tell and, you know, it would have come out one way or another. So I definitely agree with you that it set a good precedent, and I very much believe in fan fiction too, and that it's a great way for writers to get started. So, you know, why not start with fan fiction and then move to self-publishing maybe, and then traditionally publish books? We need more authors with different stories. So I'd love to see that happen to more people.
Right. I think my only issue with, not my only, I have several, but one of my main issues with the 50 Shades of Grey thing is there's an article on Dear Author, And if you look at the fan fiction and you compare it to what's printed in that novel that's making bajillions of dollars, it is so not changed. Like, so little of it has changed from what the original was, even though she's coming out and saying it's all changed. You can run both of them through Turnitin, and I think 60% of the information is the same. So even though they're saying, oh, it's been heavily edited, it's all been changed, when you run it through, it hasn't been changed. It hasn't been. So I think that's part of it. And then when you hear her do interviews, it's like, it was all about her. She knew all of this. This was her thing. And I get that it's her story, but I think there's just something wrong with basing it off of a fandom and a, you know, a storyline, and then taking full credit for it and not acknowledging it for what it is. You know, this is what you did. That's fine. Be proud of that. You own it. You're making the money off of it now, so own it. And I think that's my problem with her, is that she didn't own any of it. It was always this big playoff about how, you know, she's writing new things and she's doing this and that and the other. And I think that's where my issues lie, is that there wasn't a lot of, yeah, I wrote it as a fan fiction. She won't even like talk about the fact that it was fan fiction first. So I think that's kind of where I find it to be a little sketchy on her end of things. So,
oh yeah, the whole thing seems sketchy, to be completely honest. I mean, I don't know. I haven't read it. I haven't read the original fan fiction. I haven't read Twilight in years. But, you know, I do. I mean, I know for myself, I would feel uncomfortable fan fiction that I wrote. Like, even if I felt that what it became was genuinely original, unless I was damn sure that it was really original, I would feel very uncomfortable putting it in front of anyone. At least, you know, anyone who wasn't an anonymous person on the internet. And no, I agree. It's not really a, you know, yay E.L. James. It's more of a yay Stephanie Meyer / maybe a little of the stigma. I guess this whole episode is about stigma. You know, we'll maybe be removed from fan fiction. Although, given that it is 50 Shades of Grey, maybe that's a pipe dream.
Well, see, here's the other thing. It is not the only fan fiction recently turned into actual printed books. And here's the really funny part, is there's at least two others, and they're both Twilight fan fiction that has been turned into, you know, published novels.
Interesting.
So yeah, there's one called Beautiful Bastard, and I think the original title when it was a fan fiction was The Office. And here's the difference between what Beautiful Bastard is and what, you know, 50 Shades of Grey is. When you take Beautiful Bastard and you put it into Turnitin, there's maybe 15-20% of the original work that was there is left in the book. So that, to me, that's a drastic change, and they really work to make it different. And you can't tell, like, when you read it, there's nothing in it that would even vaguely connect to anything Twilight. Like, it's changed so much so that it's even changed from when it was a fan fiction. I mean, it's drastically different. So I think that's a different product than when you look at 50 Shades of Grey. And then there's another one. Is it Gabriel's Inferno or something? I forget the name of it. I don't remember what it is, but somebody can leave a comment and tell me. But there's another one that was also a Twilight fan fiction that was made into a novel, that was optioned as or picked up as a novel. So I think it's really funny that they're all Twilight based and picked up. And I'm wondering if, because nothing happened when E.L. James did it, if all these other ones now can take that step without kind of having to worry about the pressure of being sued.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are authors who are a lot more militant about that kind of thing. You know, like George R. R. Martin would not tolerate, you know, that kind of achievement on someone's part. And I think Orson Scott Card basically threatened to, like, hunt you down and cut your fingers off if you
How nice. Ever. He's so pleasant.
Yeah. No, nice. I mean, I'm lying. I'm exaggerating. But it was basically like, I'll sue you and take all of your money. You know, so it's an interesting area, because I do think that a lot of really spectacular writing comes out of fan fiction. And I think that especially, you know, it's almost a shame, because especially, you know, very vast works like, you know, Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones, where there are just huge untapped areas that the story doesn't go and that readers' imaginations can go. And I wonder, you know, and it's interesting, because at the same time, I don't want somebody to make money off of a work. You know, if I were an author, I would support fan fiction, but I don't want people making money off of it. And so I kind of wonder where the middle ground is. I wonder if it's more just like a don't ask, don't tell that's, you know, that's coming, that, you know, maybe more authors will be published via fan fiction, but fewer will admit it.
Yeah, that's something that I would really like to see, is an author who uses it as a sort of jumping off point where they've written fan fiction, they've got a huge audience, and then they decide to make their own original work, and that audience carries over with them. You know, it's not necessarily publishing the fan fiction where you do have to worry about the legality of it, but, you know, write your own story, then use what you've learned from that fan fiction and bring your audience over with you and publish that. And I think that is a more viable solution, something that will make everybody happy.
Well, Cassandra Clare would be an example of that, wouldn't she? I mean,
yep. Alexandra Bracken, you know, The Darkest Minds, she wrote fan fiction before that too.
I think a lot of authors have. I know Sarah Reese Brennan also wrote fan fiction before she kind of switched over to her own stuff. I know Cassandra and Sarah started in the Harry Potter fandom and then switched over to their own writing styles and books.
Yeah, speaking of, actually, she, the author I mentioned at the beginning, she, mm-hmm. I think, wrote in her biography inside the book, you know, wrote about, you know, 20 some odd Sailor Moon fan fictions. And I just thought that was awesome.
I find that
Sailor
funny.
Moon.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's a great start for authors. It's a great thing to post to fan fiction. I just think that there is a very fine line between writing fanfic and then publishing fan fiction. You know, I think it's still based on someone else's ideas. So I just am very wary of that fine line.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, especially because I feel like supporters of fan fiction have to be wary of that, because, you know, I mean, in my ideal world, fan fiction is all, you know, a love-based phenomenon, basically. And, you know, it's altruistic in a way. But when it infringes on the comfortable line between, you know, money-making and original inspiration, I agree. It's best to stay on the side of the fan. Best to stay on the fan side as opposed to the I'll sue you side.
Very true, very true. So do you guys have any recommendations for either self-published works or if, you know, now that we've talked about it, any sort of fan fiction that you love from some of the fandoms that we cover?
I'll throw out a couple of self-pub books. The first one that I have here is from a friend of mine, and his name is Christopher Stocking, and he wrote a novella, actually, called His Only Star. And it is sort of a young adult / new adult book, and this is very dark and sort of tragic, but a very realistic view of a boy and a girl who run away from home and the sort of things that they encounter on their way. And this one sort of just, I don't know, it's hard to explain. I just really connected with it. It was such a beautiful story, and I give it 5 stars. So I think, you know, everybody should check out His Only Star by Christopher Stocking. And there's a couple other series that I've personally edited, and that's just the Jack Noble series and the Core Justice series. And I think those are great too, but probably not our usual audiences. They are adult books, military type, Marine Corps stuff. But those are definitely some quality books that I think, you know, people tend to look down on just because it's self-pubbed, but they're all really well written.
Excellent. I have one that I can think of off the top of my head, and it's called Song of the Red Cloak, and it's by Chantal Acevedo. And it's actually the one I was talking about earlier, where it was, you know, this book, it's a great story. It's set in the time of Sparta. And so it's an ancient Greek state, and you have these two boys who grow up together. So it's kind of I guess it would be considered a young adult, but it's really kind of that time period kind of crosses everything off the list. You know, it doesn't have to be young adult, but it's really fantastic. It's about this conflict they have to go through. It's these two boys grow up together. One's a slave and, you know, one's more of a prince. And so they kind of work together, and some things happen as the story goes along, and it becomes kind of a high action kind of book. And it's really unfortunate that it didn't get traditionally published or picked up, because it's such a fantastic book. And I feel like so many more people need to read it. It's just really, really enjoyable. And again, it's a great book. And if you have like male readers, it's a really high interest novel. So it's something that they would easily be able to get into. So I think that's really good. And Tarek would be supremely pleased, as it's told from a male point of view. So I'll make sure I give him that one later. Yes. So that one in particular really sticks out to me.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a Kindle, so I think that might be part of why I don't tap into this that often. So
you can get a Kindle app from your computer and download it right to your computer. I mean, obviously, not as convenient, but, you know, if you ever had to read something that was only an ebook, you could do that.
Yeah, no, I used to do that at the agency, and it hurt my eyes.
Yeah.
I'm a very traditional paper person. Oh well.
So that brings us to the end of our second book hype, and we're so happy you guys are all listening. Again, if you have any questions or comments, please leave them in the comment section attached to the podcast. We'd love to hear from you and hear your suggestions for any topics you think we should discuss. There'll also be a post, so look for it, containing the books that we're gonna do for our book discussions, and some books, you know, you guys will have the option of suggesting books at that time for the books discussions as well, so that you guys have a say in what we're reading and talking about. So thank you so much for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Michal.
And I'm Karen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.